everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Mobilecast. We're coming to you live from the Mobilecast studio here in Oakland, New Jersey, and I'm your host, Brian Katz. We have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about the Microsoft Nokia deal that got announced this morning, very, very early, and I have some awesome guests lined up for you. We have Ben Beharin from TechPinions, Bob Egan from the Sefferin Group, and Matt Rozoff, Editor-in-Chief of SiteWorld. Ben, why don't you just introduce yourself, although you've been on the show before, just refresh everybody who you are.
Sure. Ben Beharin, live and work out of Silicon Valley. I'm an industry analyst for creative strategies and write for techpinions.com.
And Bob, although we did a show with you, we didn't air it because we ran into technical difficulties. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay. So Bob Egan, chief analyst for Sefferin Group. I spend most of my time working on mobile strategies for large enterprises.
And finally, we have Matt Rozoff. Matt, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. I'm the editor-in-chief of SiteWorld, which is an IDG publication covering consumerization of IT in all its different forms with a focus on mobile. Among other jobs I've had in the past, I was an analyst at a company called Directions on Microsoft for 10 years. So I have a pretty good background in Microsoft's thinking, although I've been out of that job now for about 3 years, and the thinking in the company has changed quite a bit since that.
So I think we have a great panel for this, and this is going to be a lot of fun. So why don't we just start with the deal itself? They announced it last night around midnight Eastern time, a little bit earlier than that. And, you know, people have been saying it's been in the works for a while. Yes, no, and did they have to do it? You know, Ben, why don't we start with you for this one?
Sure. From our standpoint, I think it became clear to us that this deal was roughly an inevitable conclusion. Either, in our mind, Microsoft would acquire someone like Nokia or possibly HTC when we first started thinking about this. When Google bought Motorola, you know, we've studied the trend of verticalization and kind of what it means across the board through, you know, industry cycles when markets are not mature, when they reach maturity, and then what's needed to compete. And we've always been a fan of what happens when vertical companies, tightly integrate hardware, software, and services. And we were just always convinced it was a great way to differentiate in a market that values differentiation. And you know, when Google bought Motorola, you know, we thought that this would again go in this direction. And I think now they're starting to show that they are. And obviously that's a similar template for something like Microsoft, in that they don't have very good hardware chops, have not shown any real, expertise in hardware outside of something like the Xbox, even though it had a lot of problems in its earlier iterations. And they did need a good bit of hardware engineering, which, you know, if you follow job hunting and hardware engineering in today's realm, it's pretty hard to come by quality hardware engineers. So it seemed like it was a good and inevitable acquisition, just given some of the weaknesses of Microsoft. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about whether or not the strategy, you know, will play out or not.
Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Ben. I think for a long time, most of us have thought that this was an inevitable conclusion. I think, as far back as a couple of years ago, I think that Microsoft took a close look at this and saw a company that, you know, was really struggling to put a identity to its turnaround. I think putting some money in it, putting one of its own soldiers over there with a plan that basically said, get them a lot more focused and we'll come back and take another serious look at this, is exactly, I think, you know, to Ben's point, you know, I think something we all expected sooner or later. We'll talk more about what I think the valuation is or is not and where the strategy going forward. But I don't think this is unexpected.
Matt?
Yeah, I recall as far back as, I think, 2011, and there were rumors that Microsoft was talking to Nokia and pretty actively interested in buying them. And then, you know, earlier this year, the Wall Street Journal reported it. I talked to a very credible source, and he said, yeah, the rumors are absolutely true. They're circling each other. The question I had is, why didn't they do it earlier? And I think there was that historical hesitation on Microsoft's part about getting into the hardware business in a big way. You go back throughout Microsoft's history, and their business model has always been software. And the great thing about software is your cost of goods is covered early on, and then every incremental sale is basically pure profit. And I think Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates both look at hardware as a much harder business to be competitive in. But the landscape in mobile has changed to the point where I think the old OEM model of licensing a commercial operating system and expecting large numbers of people to pay for it is going away. And you know, Apple killed it at the top end with verticalization. Android killed it at the low end by giving the operating system away and turning it into a commodity. And now, you know, Google's following Apple into the high end with Motorola. So I think Microsoft looked at this probably starting about a year ago and said, you know, there's really no way we can compete without a hardware maker on our side.
Yeah, I think those are great points, Matt. And, you know, this is a deal that when they struck the original deal in 2011 with Nokia, you know, and Stephen Elop did the what they call the burning platform menu. You know, I was surprised that they didn't buy them. And, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, Google pretty much gave it away for free and enabled people to give handsets away for next to nothing. And when Microsoft came out with their first set of handsets with a bunch of different vendors, none of them were cheap. And they couldn't compete with Google on the high end or on the low end. They couldn't compete with Apple on the high end. And, you know, so they're playing this middle piece. They weren't really ready with what I would think is, while innovative, and I actually like Windows Phone 7 and 8, really wasn't ready for prime time, especially, you know, in the enterprise market where, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to Microsoft because they wanted us to use their phone. So, you know, I can't, you know, great points from all of you. Anybody want to add anything or should we move on to price?
I'll add just one thing real quickly. I think there was also a pretty big technical transition when Microsoft created the Windows Phone operating system. You know, they threw out Windows Mobile and started over. But the first version of Windows Phone, Windows Phone 7, still ran on the Windows CE kernel. So they had to go ahead and move everything over to the NT kernel, which is the same kernel the Windows desktop's now been based on for 10 years or so. And so I think even if they had wanted to jump right away, they're going to have this platform transition anyway. So it's almost like they were stuck. And I think they really couldn't even think about an acquisition until that tech transition was made and they really had all their ducks in a row and everything's at least running on the same kernel.
Yeah, that's a great point because if you remember, you know, Microsoft was actually late with Windows Phone 7. If I remember correctly, it was over a year late with their original announcements. And, you know, that's part of what made it difficult. And, you know, getting people in line and, you know, they show what was an innovative interface, you know, certainly different from the Android and iOS launcher type tiles and talked about live tiles. But, you know, when you first looked at it, the live tiles weren't really live and there are other things. And yet, you know, they've actually built a pretty good platform. So.
Well, the other thing I'd add too, I think, you know, Matt's right that there was, you know, their hesitancy to just jump into the hardware business based on the timing. And I think, you know, just from my talks with them and even other OEMs, there had been an anticipation, I should say, that more vendors would go full bore with Windows Phone. I think, you know, they heard the same things that we heard from the vendors, and they being Microsoft, that people were frustrated with Android. You know, this was, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, and they were frustrated with the fragmentation. They were frustrated of Google, how they work with their partners, and there seemed to be, you know, this growing, you know, anxiety for, you know, something else, something different. And I think Microsoft had hoped that that was going to be that platform, and it just never turned out that way. And now I think it just got to the point where, you know, no other OEMs were going to adopt this, and Nokia was really their best, you know, their best bet going forward. And so all things considered, including I think the platform shift, them hoping to get more vendors on board, you know, and just kind of that whole transition, I think, led up to this particular timing being, you know, the right timing, if we consider that at all, versus, you know, a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ben's right. You know, when I think about the state of Microsoft and its strategy, even just 2 years ago, I don't think Microsoft, even more importantly than thinking about whether they should get in the hardware business or not, I don't think they had fully baked in the notion that I actually have been talking about, to be very ironic, and that is that for years, Microsoft has been pushing the desktop interface to phones, and now they've been doing the opposite. And I think it's only, you know, since that time that they sort of came around to doing that. You know, we'll see if that's the right strategy. And I think coupling that with the fact that when you think about the Windows Phone share in the marketplace, you know, Nokia has 81 and a fraction, you know, percent of that share. And so, you know, I think the other issue had to do with, you know, financial incentives here, that there was a lot of worry about the overall financial state of Nokia. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about maybe Nokia playing sort of the joker card to move over to another operating system, Android in particular. But I think that, you know, the timing is that I think they had their head together on what they wanted to do. They've done the first part of a pretty major reorganization, and that there were some financial issues around their largest OEM. And I think, you know, those three things sort of combined into a perfect storm that culminated in today's events.
I think that's a great segue into our next topic, which is really, how about the price? I mean, you know, in reality, in U.S. dollars, it came out to $7.1 billion, if my math is right. And, you know, if you look at it, they paid essentially, I think it's around $5 billion for the device and services division, and then another $2 billion or so of U.S. dollars for 10 years of the patents. They get to use the Nokia name, and they get a bunch of this stuff. But at the same time, and I think you just mentioned it, Bob, you know, that they also offered $1.9 billion in loans, which Nokia would have to pay back. And you know, 2.5 years ago, they were looking at $30 billion, and in 2007, Nokia was worth $110 billion. So, Matt, why don't we start with you, since we ended with Bob? You know, the price.
I think the price is a bargain for Microsoft. You know, they have more than $70 billion in cash, and there's a repatriation issue as well. If they spend that cash on acquisitions outside the United States, they don't have to pay the same kind of tax on it. So, you know, to them, it's pocket change. I do think if they were thinking about this strategically a couple years ago and waiting for the price to drop, you could make the argument that they've waited too long. You know, the deal was announced today. It's got to be approved by shareholders, and then the integration starts, and that happens in 2014. They're probably not going to get the first, you know, fully Microsoft / Nokia phone out until the end of 2014. That's about how long it took Google to get the first real Motorola Google phone out, about 2 years. So, you know, by that time, who knows where the market's going to be. So I think they got a bargain. I think it's pretty indicative of Nokia's troubles, the fact that they got some necessary short-term cash infusion here. I mean, I think that they were probably in really bad shape, and that's probably one of the things that caused Microsoft to jump. It's sort of a sad day for Nokia, especially if you consider, yeah, they were worth $100 billion 5 years ago.
Ben or Bob?
Well, I agree. I think this is a good deal for Microsoft. I don't think it's the end of the deal. I think, frankly, it's far too cheap. And I think we're going to see a shareholder rebellion. I mean, that's my take. You know, frankly, you got to kind of take a look at some of the other players out there that, if nothing else, will try and drive that price up for Microsoft. Some of them, perhaps China or Korea or, you know, somebody in the Asia Pac. Certainly not going to be, I don't think, Samsung. I don't think it's going to be somebody like BlackBerry either. But I don't think we've seen the end of this in terms of price. I think it's wishful thinking on the behalf of Microsoft. In terms of Matt's comment around, is this really disruptive to the pipeline? I don't think that's the case. I think, you know, this month, early next month, we're going to see some new devices come to the market. I think it's going to include a tablet. That's my guess. And I think the pipeline, certainly for the next 9 months to a year, is pretty well wedded. I think the question, you know, that I have is, you know, when I look at the whole ecosystem, you know, in my opinion, you know, the operating system wars are kind of over, right? And then, frankly, I sort of make the argument that a lot of the wars that people like to talk around hardware is also over. To, you know, beyond the most sophisticated tech zealot out there, the difference between hardware devices that were made by different manufacturers over the last 12 months or so have been pretty incremental and not necessarily revolutionary. I mean, there's a few exceptions, like, you know, the appearance of a 41 megapixel camera, perhaps, but, you know, to the average mass market buyer, it's really been pretty revolutionary. On the other hand, I think when you look at the share and the momentum behind what Apple and in the Android ecosystem, in particular, Samsung, have benefited from in terms of their overall momentum, I think it's less about hardware and more about the ecosystems. And by no means am I suggesting that they've completed you know, an expansive ecosystem, but I think they're already beginning to see the network effects. And I think the numbers in the case of Microsoft profit, in the case of Samsung unit volumes, are reflecting the benefit that they're reaping because of the ecosystems.
Ben? Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with everybody that the price is certainly seems really low, especially, you know, given the position in market share across the board, especially in, you know, with the Asha products and just other you know, penetration that they have of value, and even their patents alone, I think, are extremely valuable. So if you just compare, you know, apples to apples in terms of, you know, brand, global brand strength, things like that, to where Motorola was, and which was bought for, I think it was 12.1, you know, you look at that and it's hard to make a case that, you know, where Nokia is at today is actually less than where Motorola was, given that they're both, you know, the trajectory of both their sales is almost identical, you know, in terms of how they were declining. So, you know, all things considered, you'd think it would at least be in that range. But, you know, I think – go ahead.
No, I was going to say Nokia. I mean, they sold 61 million phones last quarter. Yeah. Most of them weren't smartphones, but they're still selling a ton of phones. And, yeah, and Motorola wasn't.
Exactly. You know, and so I think, you know, if you put those things in, you know, comparing them, you say, well either – the value of hardware businesses is just declining at a fairly rapid rate, which I think, you know, you could make that argument. But I think if you look at just the value of the overall deal, you would think, you know, given what they've got, the assets they have, the IP, the R&D that they're spending, you know, from the CTO's office side, they've got a lot of patents. They have a lot of patents. They do a lot in that department. So, you know, arguably as much as anybody. So I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we did see some sort of a shareholder revolt or something around that. I mean, I think, you know, the value should definitely have been, you know, at least equal to what it was. And I think that again raises sort of speculation as to, okay, in terms of the timing, you know, why now? Was Nokia potentially threatening to say, okay, we'll move to Android because we're just bleeding and we need money? Even though Microsoft was giving them a fair amount of cash from a marketing standpoint, you know, that was really, it wasn't more than that. But obviously, you know, on top of this, from a value standpoint, Microsoft would have seen their roadmap. You know, as Bob said, maybe there's a tablet, maybe there's some hybrids in the works, maybe there's, you know, any range of devices. And so they'd have to be on board with that as well. And that vision supports Microsoft's being, again, holistic, and that it's hardware, software, and services. But I do think that you know, again, the argument could be made that the value in hardware itself, to Bob's point, that it's been more evolutionary. There hasn't been a lot going on there. Hardware differentiation is just going to be harder and harder every single year. But ecosystem differentiation, software differentiation, services differentiation, that's really where we're moving to. And so that's potentially, you know, why one could argue that the value of hardware alone is diminishing, and it was just kind of hard to wrap up their services business from a, you know, financial standpoint.
Yeah. I agree with you there, and you know, I also look at, you know, we have BlackBerry that's kind of going the same route. You know, it's marketing itself out there. We hear the rumors about HTC all the time, and HTC kind of started as a white label maker, became its own, you know, brand. And you know, I part of it may just be that there are so many people out there that you can buy. But I do agree that it really is the ecosystem, and you know, it's hard to understand what revolutionary changes can happen in the smartphone itself without really happening in software in that ecosystem.
Well, you know, it's that lack of ecosystem that really is killing BlackBerry, and I think it's that lack of ecosystem that has really hurt Nokia on the high end, right? So this is both an issue and an opportunity for Microsoft. But, you know, as Matt and Ben are saying, you know, and I agree, this is cheap. And the fact that 40% of the people who bought a Nokia handset over the last 12 months, appear to be first-time smartphone buyers, right? So they're not really committed to an ecosystem. So, you know, you have to start evaluating, you know, the net present value, if you will, of future buyers, so the, you know, the other half of the population who really hasn't upgraded yet. I also thought it was pretty interesting that on the investor call today that on average, I guess, Microsoft – but by the way, you know, Microsoft hasn't been putting a lot of money into Nokia. In fact, I think last quarter, Nokia actually became a net payee to Microsoft.
That's correct.
That's right.
That's right.
Right. So I think that was another thing that may have swung the pendulum here, right? But where was I headed with that? So I think that
I think you were heading to the point that Microsoft makes $10 on a handset that's sold today. Yeah. And if they own the hardware, they would make $40 per handset.
Well, that was the interesting thing. They were sort of looking at this as a break-even proposition based on the current acquisition price and the terms associated with that. That they could go from an average of $10, which is across all the Windows Phone devices that Microsoft ships, to the high end of the Lumia line, if it was under their guise that they could now collect $40 a device and the break-even would be around 50 million units. I mean, when I heard that, I said, well, you know, step one, there's going to be another reorg within Microsoft. Step two, they're gonna sell that Azure line or kill it. We'll have another burning memo platform maybe. I don't know. There's something going on.
So, well, let's take that and move to the next topic. You know, really – what's the strategy here for Microsoft moving forward? Is this really a, you know, viable piece? Because, you know, my opinion here is I look and I see, you know, the call and everything, lots of great things they said, and if you looked at the slides, and there is a case to be made that you take the Asha line and you use that to build up for, you know, future smartphone buyers. You're in parts of the world that you don't necessarily have penetration. And Apple certainly doesn't have penetration in a lot of that area. Android does in some cases because they have phones that cost next to nothing. And this gives Microsoft a chance to play in that area. On the other hand, you know, Ballmer admitted last night that they don't really know anything about feature phones. And so where do you go from here? And, you know, the other piece with this is really strategy because – if the rumor tablet's correct and it's a Windows RT tablet, I don't really see it helping Microsoft out. And I know that, you know, individually I've talked with all of you about the fact that I really think that Microsoft should have gone with Windows Phone and moved that to their, instead of their RT tablet, so that really they just have Windows Pro and Windows Phone or Windows Tablet, same operating system, and makes a little more sense moving forward. Ben?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things strategically that are at play. I mean, I think, you know, you alluded to the point that, you know, that they don't know anything about feature phones. And I think I would argue that Microsoft doesn't really know anything about actual consumers. And from that standpoint, I do think that Nokia, I've had some very smart interactions with some folks there, people who actually get what consumers are doing at a global level. And again, I emphasize at a global level because the U.S. is sort of a predictable microcosm. But when you look at China, when you look at Russia and India and Africa and places like that where, you know, people are using these devices very differently because they are their portals to both the internet and to a computing device. Microsoft has a lot of knowledge that needs to be gained there. And I think Nokia has for quite some time been gaining those assets. Now, granted, you know, I think Nokia hasn't been perfect in this. I mean, they certainly made the mistake of not picking up dual SIM as quickly as some of their competitors, but they jumped on that bandwagon quick, and I think within 8 months had a competitive product that both the carriers want and some unique solutions that the market was demanding on that, particular to that use case. So I think they're gaining a lot strategically across the board with consumer segments, with relationships with carriers that are understanding what's happening at a regional level, I think way more than they've got right now with just a very heavy desktop and PC sort of focused mindset with their solution. So I think they're gaining that. And I think we don't know really what the impact of that will be on their thinking. I mean, I think Microsoft has a lot of inherent cultural struggles that they've got to get over. Maybe Nokia and some of the the fervor that these guys have comes in and you know, starts to light some fire under some new areas or some new thinking. But there's a lot of interesting assets that I think Nokia has, both at a knowledge level of regions, also just the people that they have. I think they've got some sharp folks there who have some good thinking about mobility and mobile computing and what that means going forward. So they're getting that. And I think it's going to be hard, you know, in speculating right now what this looks like. When, you know, 5 or 6 years from now, we might say, okay, this is the impact. These were the things over the next 2 or 3 years that we can point back on and say that, you know, that Nokia acquisition really fed to. But I think a lot of it is sort of vague at this point, because we just assume, well, you know, they don't have enough apps. You know, I think the strategy to try to move feature phone users up into this environment is certainly critical for Microsoft. But again, I think they're just so ignorant, I think, to many of the mass market and more consumer global elements. Because again, you know, when all we were talking about was desktop and notebooks, and we were seeing that penetration in double digit growth annually in places like China, you know, in Africa and Russia and Brazil, etc., you know, they were getting that information of those regions. And now that they have hardly any pure mobile presence in smartphones and, you know, to a degree tablets, they just don't see that knowledge is foreign to them. So they need it. And I think this is going to help shed some light on that, strategically.
So Ben, let me actually ask you a question about that. Sorry to interrupt you there, but do you think that that culture will shine through and that can really, you know, bubble up? Or do you think that, you know, yeah, Microsoft's changing their CEO sometime in the next year and all, but, you know, they're known for their stack ranking. They're known for not necessarily letting creativity thrive. Do you think that can survive in there? And do you think,
I think it has to. I mean, I think Microsoft is at a fork in the road where they either need to make a decision right now that they're just going to focus on things like cloud and server and really just own services in that vector, or they're going to go after consumer markets. I think we really haven't seen too many companies very successfully straddle both sides of the fence and be both a great consumer company and both a great enterprise company. It either bleeds over to a degree, but you just don't see that in today's market. So I think, you know, they're at that decision. This acquisition, I think, points to me that they're looking at saying, okay, look, we consider consumer very important, so we're going to go after it, and we're going to use it to feed, you know, all of our enterprise strategies as well. And that's an okay way to go about it. But I think that culture has to get through. You know, I think that they are challenged with a mindset that just is, you know, completely ignorant to just what's happening around the world, and particularly in mobility with real world consumers, not business users. So, you know, one of the things I've thought that would be interesting for them is that they take this devices and services division and they headquarter it here in Silicon Valley. You know, not that Silicon Valley is just, you know, a 100% guaranteed strategy to work, but I think more often than not, I can point to many of BlackBerry's failures in being that they were not here, and more importantly, they didn't listen to their engineers that were here. You know, had they been here, seeing what was happening, the acceleration in mobility, perhaps they would have made some different decisions. And I think the same is true with Microsoft. You know, not seeing what's happening here at the grassroots in Silicon Valley, I think sometimes hurts them more than it hinders that. So I'd love to see, you know, that group get focused here, get stationary here, get that talent pool, really start looking at just what's happening in this rapid, you know, market that we're seeing both in software services and to some degree this hardware renaissance we're seeing in Silicon Valley, and feed off some of that and let that culture impact it.
Yeah, Nokia certainly got a nice new headquarters down at Sunnyvale. So
Yeah, right next to the Apple building, no less.
What's that?
I said, it's actually right next to an Apple building.
Right. Well, I mean, that's my view. I think that I had told the co-CEOs at BlackBerry, I don't know how many times, that they really needed a Silicon Valley presence. They just didn't understand it. I do think that Nokia has recognized it. But, you know, Ben, you raise a very interesting point, one that I really agree with, and that is that for the first time, I think Microsoft has really made an acquisition that puts the voice of the consumer and gives them some expertise on a global basis rather than the voice of the business user. And I think we really have to take a look at can they execute? I mean, you know, Microsoft's good at the A in M&A, but they haven't been so good on the M, right? And so, the issue I have is that they've kind of got a, you know, they operate internally almost like a civil war attitude. I mean, all these groups are pitted against each other in these stack rankings that don't work, and a lot of people have figured out how to game, right? And so I think that is what's caused a lot of issues at Microsoft. I think the second, you know, is that they really don't understand the consumer market. Now they've got an asset. And I think third is that they, you know, this organization that Ballmer doubts, this very, you know, it's a functional organization, it's centered, you know, on research development areas. But, you know, this is a company and a market, especially when you start thinking about consumers, where great companies have really aligned around products. And there's a couple exceptions. You know, Apple is certainly an exception, but it doesn't have a lot of products. You know, the product width is not anywhere near the size of Microsoft or Samsung or some of the others. So, you know, I frankly think that, one of my signals around whether this is going to work or not is that whoever the new CEO comes in is first going to take a look at what Ballmer did in terms of organization and completely undo it. Second is we have to realize that Ballmer's not alone on this decision. If anything, I think Gates played a big role here. And we'll see. Go ahead.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I completely agree with that last point. To me, the sort of the events that have gone on the last couple of weeks or last couple of months at Microsoft, it looks to me like somebody broke the emergency glass at some point in the last 6 months or the last year. Really. And I don't think these things should be taken in isolation. And I don't think this is anywhere close to the end. I think Microsoft's going to do a lot of very surprising things over the next 6 months. Nokia and owning a phone maker is probably part of the equation. And I think they're probably even looking beyond smartphones, and they might even acknowledge that they're not going to get a huge chunk of that business, but they have to own the tablet market, or they have to own a big chunk of the tablet market, or Windows really does fade to irrelevance. So I think that's probably going to be part of it. But I don't know. The fact that in the last year they've done a bunch of things that the old Microsoft would never have done, like they would never have competed with their OEM partners making PC hardware, and then they came out with the Surface. They would never have capitulated to an activist investor on the board. Ballmer was going to stick around until 2017 or 2018. Nobody could get rid of him. Seems to me that something, and I don't know what it was, but something triggered some real major sweeping new thinking in Microsoft. And I think they're really going to shake a lot of stuff up. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw headcount go down. Wouldn't be surprised if they bought RIM or BlackBerry for pennies on the dollar, what it used to be worth. Wouldn't be surprised if there are some other acquisitions and maybe some spinoffs too. It just seems too strange that all of these things happened together, and I don't think they happened in isolation.
So let's take that last part, though. You know, somebody I think mentioned it earlier. You know, the new CEO that we're talking about that's going to replace Ballmer, and you know, we saw a lot of tweets and a lot of people writing about the fact that you know now Elop has the inside track on that. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's necessarily a good thing. He came from Microsoft. He's very good at mergers and acquisitions, this included. Did the same thing with Adobe and Macromedia and a couple others. You think it would be good or bad as him as a CEO?
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting, and I'm not sure, you know, if all of you have, you know, sort of read the whole Trojan horse theory, but I actually heard this dating back to when Elop took over as CEO, that there was speculation that this, what just happened, was sort of always the end game, that, that he would get in and get experience in mobility, trying to just understand, you know, mobile philosophies, relationships with carriers, you know, how to improve devices at the end, you know, user standpoint, and then, you know, either turn around and then come back to Microsoft and be the CEO having gained that knowledge, or, you know, that they would just buy them and bring them back in. And, you know, there's people on Twitter who alter Uber, you know, conspiracy theorists who are saying, well, you know, his job was to just drive the value down so that it would be cheap. Then he'd come back and be CEO. So super, super obviously conspiracy theories, but it's an interesting strategy, you know, and obviously completely, completely a theory. And I really don't know if I believe it or not, but it's an interesting one to talk about if that was always the plan. But I agree. I don't think he's the guy. I think, again, if they're going to make this go, they need somebody who really understands global consumer markets. And one of the things that I think, again, becomes key to that is that all of these regions are going to be different. You know, I just don't think we're going to see the same exact patterns per continent. And so you have to understand what those markets are doing at a grassroots level, and they've just never known that. I don't think ELOP knows that. I'm not even sure, you know, I think there's people in Nokia that get that, but I think there's a lot more experience that needs to come, you know, into Microsoft to make that happen. So, you know, I don't know if he's the guy in that regard. I'd like to see them get somebody who obviously understands ecosystems, but also understands global consumer markets and what it's going to mean to compete in that from both a hardware, software, and a services standpoint.
Yeah, you know, I know Elop personally, and I like him. I mean, I like him on a personal basis. He's a good guy. He's a good, you know, he's a good father with a lot of kids. He flies airplanes. I fly airplanes. You know, so I mean, I like him. But you know, he's a tactical product guy. He's not sort of a big vision turnaround ecosystem guy. And you know, I think that's going to be the DNA of the CEO there. My picks, by the way. You know, further put them on the record have been, you know, guys like maybe Bill McDermott out of SAP or Ginny out of IBM. I think those are the kinds of caliber. I don't think Thompson's the guy. He ran kind of a monolithic curve of being at the right place at the right time at Symantec. I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't think Elop's the right guy for the job. But, you know, what the hell do we know, right?
I would actually be surprised if he does turn out to be the new CEO. I think I sort of agree with Bob there. I think they're aiming for something different, and they'll end up with somebody else in that role, somebody who has more experience, you know, operating across a really broad and diverse range of products, maybe somebody with some deep consumer experience. I'm not sure. The other thing is, as far as the conspiracy theory goes, it is appealing because it's so simple. And it's, sometimes the simple thing is the truth. But Elop was only at Microsoft for about 2 years. So, you know, he ran Office and the business division, but he's not. He doesn't strike me as kind of being the long timer that Gates and Ballmer would send on this kind of recon mission. So I don't know it's appealing, and you know, sometimes the obvious thing is true, but I really do think he thought he could save Nokia, and it just hasn't worked out that way. I don't know. The CEO hunt's going to be interesting, but again, I don't think this is the final step. I think Microsoft's going to probably do a couple other big surprising things. I mean, they have a whole bunch of different directions that they could go in. They could expand their consulting services business and pull an IBM. They could go buy a PC maker. There's a whole bunch of different things, and I don't think anything's off the table at this point. I think they really are taking a serious look at their business and saying, we do not want to be irrelevant in 10 years. And what do we have to do to fix that? They got $70 billion in cash. They've got amazing cash flow, huge customer base. I mean, all of Microsoft's historic strengths are still there. So they can make some radical moves now to avoid irrelevance.
Yeah, so why don't we – I think those are great points. I'm going to say let's leave those to the last topic, because I think that kind of goes with what's next. But, you know, before we move on to the next one, what do you guys, you know, as long as we're talking Microsoft strategy and everything else, what do you guys take on, you know, Julie Larson Green, that, you know, sort of, she was just promoted, put in charge of devices and services, Xbox One, everything else. You know, she's kind of being demoted and slotting under Elop. And then the corollary to that, or the other question is, you know, we're talking a lot about the consumer business. And, you know, before this deal was announced, a lot of people have been saying that, you know, Microsoft kind of has to split itself in half, consumer versus enterprise. And just, you know, wondering what your thoughts are on that as it relates to this in mobile and strategy.
Well, you know, my 2 cents, for what it's worth, is that I think that, you know, nothing they have done, I think, is in this current reorg is going to stand. You know, I think it was Ballmer's last hurrah. At least I thought it was until he decided to buy Nokia. But I think Gates is pulling the strings there. And I frankly think that, you know, he made a lot of those decisions around the reorg that I think Gates might have been involved with. But I think they became a, well, this is easy. You know, we'll let them do that, but we're going to undo them when we figure out what we're going to do anyhow, right? And you know, I'll go back to saying that I think the first thing we need to see from Microsoft is to get them organized around mobile. All right, let's get some P&L around cloud. Let's get some P&L around mobile. I mean, you talk about the size of Microsoft, and then you have all of the assets, as Matt said. But at the end of the day, very tough for a company this size to pivot. And it's a product breadth issue. It's a global distribution issue. It's a partner issue. And I think until the company establishes P&Ls and fuels them with the common things, you know, related to, you know, the lowest levels of the ecosystem, that they're going to really struggle. And so they've got to get rid of this Civil War society that they live in. They've got to get focused on P&Ls. And when I look at all of their competition, I can identify who's responsible for mobile. Who's responsible for mobile at Microsoft?
Yeah. Yeah, I think those are all, you know, valid points. I think, you know, one of the things that constantly strikes me, you know, about all of this with Microsoft is, you know, is again, you know, how, you know, we critique other companies, you know, particularly Asian companies, for being super siloed, but so is Microsoft, you know, for a really long time. And, you know, we admit, you know, met frequently with different groups across the board. And I think, you know, always consistently sort of seen that they just weren't really on the same page with each other. You know, there wasn't as often as a unified strategy. And within consumer, it was, you know, obviously even worse. So, you know, I think, you know, like Matt said, you know, I don't think it's all set in stone now how this is going to shake out. I think, you know, we could see, you know, them split more things off. I think we could see them definitely even do, you know, hardware in mobility that still maybe not even be Nokia branded, right? Maybe there's still some Surface plays at Go. Maybe there's even some Xbox plays that Go that don't necessarily need to have the Nokia brand on it. So, you know, I think they still have some open doors, you know, to even create other Microsoft branded hardware that really is Microsoft branded hardware in other segments as well. But, you know, the key thing for them, I think, is just what happens in R&D. You know, will they increase that R&D spending? I mean, I think Nokia has always been very good at engineering. You know, the office of the CTO, those guys continually get very interesting patents, some that they give away, some that they license. But, you know, interesting technology continually being worked on there. So, you know, they can benefit from that. But by all means, you know, I by no means do I think that things are where they are. I think, you know, Matt's right. There's still a lot of either acquisitions and or consolidation that's going to happen. And Microsoft really, you know, to the point that we're all emphasizing, has to have a grand vision for the next 10, 20, 30 years and say what kind of a company is Microsoft going to be, you know, in 10 years, in 20 years, and really spend now and invest now for that future. And hopefully this is something in that direction.
So I'm going to chime in here with a little bit of historical perspective and explain why I kind of disagree with Bob here. Microsoft, I think, for a long time has been organized a lot like GE. They've had pretty clear P&Ls since, I think, 2002, 2003. They've had these divisions They've reported them separately. They've had, you know, president level executives in charge of each one of them. But if you go back to Bill Gates and what he was saying maybe 6-7 years ago, he had this catchphrase called integrated innovation, and they, you know, everybody was touting it for about a year at Microsoft, and it kind of went away. But his idea was these groups should be working more closely together. I think if anything, they're going to move away from separate P&Ls and really put some muscle behind this one Microsoft notion. And I don't think that the reorg was done exclusively by Ballmer in isolation from the board, from Gates, and from this Nokia decision. So I think if anything, we'll see them, you know, bring consumer and enterprise closer together in some ways and maybe mash the org up in some really interesting ways. I think if anything, they're the pendulum swinging the other way and they're gonna try and mash stuff together more than they ever have. I don't know if it's gonna work. I don't know if it's the right strategy, but the indication that I see is that they're pretty serious about this one Microsoft idea, and I don't think it was just Ballmer saying that on his way out the door. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think that they're pretty serious about being one company. And you know, if you take consumerization seriously as a trend, you do have to understand the consumer to sell to the enterprise, because eventually consumers are going to be the enterprise. That's who's going to buy a lot of products. So you can't, as tempting as it might be to try and pull an IBM and say, okay, we're going to get out of all these non-core businesses and just focus on selling to the enterprise. I think they're, again, looking ahead 10 years and saying, we can't do that. That's not the way things are going. So I think if anything, they're going to try and merge stuff together.
Okay. Yeah, you know, Matt, I agree. You know, I've been back and forth thinking about this thing, and, you know, maybe it comes down to the way they measure performance and the incentives for people that are within the organizations, and less about whether it's functionally oriented or product oriented. But there's something endemically broke in the way that people get excited about doing things there, and the way they game the system. I mean, I know salespeople that game the system. So
so it's,
you might be right. We're just got to figure out what the internals are that need also to change in lockstep with it.
Okay. There was that classic org chart diagram that was going around a couple years ago, and the Microsoft org chart was a bunch of little divisions pointing guns at each other.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it's totally accurate.
So, okay, we're going to go to the lightning round for the next two questions, just because I don't want to keep you guys too long. But BS or not, Microsoft actually thinks it can still get OEMs to make handsets other than what they just bought. I mean, I my personal opinion, I think everybody's just going to leave. Nokia had 80-something percent, and I don't see a reason now that they bought Nokia to actually, you know, for HTC or Samsung to keep making Windows Phone.
Ben? Yeah, I agree. I don't see it. I don't think, you know, they may say that you know, they're going to continue to, you know, license that software to anyone who wants it, but I don't see it happening. And, you know, to be honest with you, the same thing happen if they do get into the PC space with this. I think that they will fundamentally put their PC OEMs, who unfortunately don't really have a choice, but will go and seek a choice, in a real bad position. But, you know, particularly to mobile at this point, I agree. I don't think anybody else makes a Windows Phone handset. Hear them out.
I don't think it's BS that they'll offer to license it. I just don't think anyone's going to take off.
Well, yeah, let me put that.
Wishful thinking, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I thought, Matt. I mean, they must have said this and emphasize this this whole notion about why, you know, other OEMs are going to get really excited about this, and Ballmer kept making the point that he's talked with a lot of them, and I kept thinking, you know, it's wishful thinking. But you know, around 4 or 5 o'clock, I was thinking about this on the way home, and I thought, well, all right, so let me ask this question a little different. Would HTC or you pick your favorite flavor of other manufacturer that's in the wannabe loop, right? If Apple all of a sudden opened up the Apple iOS ecosystem and allowed other manufacturers to build phones, would they? Would they jump on that opportunity?
I think the ones that would do it would jump in on the low end, and I think those are the only people who may stay in the market on Microsoft or anybody else. And I look at that as people who say, you know what? I can make the phone for $50. I can sell it for $60. And I can make a billion of them, flood the Chinese or Indian market, and be done with it. I think the same with the Apple market. If I can undercut them by $250 and all these people in India who want an Apple phone, sure. But, you know, I don't see them doing that. I don't think that there are enough of them out there that it makes sense. So let's move on to the next one. Another lightning round, although we'll give you guys a minute for this one. Nokia name. Microsoft gets it for 10 years. Should they keep it? Should they rename their phones Nokia or Lumia, get rid of Windows Phone? Or in the process, will they end up, you know, destroying the Nokia name? Matt, start with you.
I think the Nokia name is dead. I think they should call it a Skype phone.
I don't think that's a bad idea.
I don't know if the carriers will like that, but I bet consumers will sure like it.
Well, I saw a story last week, and I don't even remember where, you know, who did it, but the fact that, you know, Skype, people know Skype everywhere. They're using it on cheap PCs and everything else. They know it in India. They know it in China. And it's actually a very good brand name. It would make sense to use it, but.
Yeah. I mean, to keep Nokia around for a few more years, because it also is a good international brand. But I think the Skype phone, I mean, everybody immediately would know what that is. It's a question of, that the carriers, I don't think they'd like that much.
Bob?
Well, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought about that. I think at least for some period of 10 years that the Nokia branded handset has to live and breathe, if for no other reason than Microsoft has to figure out how to get out of the Asha business. I mean, that operating system's got to go away. It's not in any way having that in the portfolio for Microsoft is, I see zero benefit. So, if they don't sell it, they've got to figure out how to leverage the relationship that they'll have with those Asher handset buyers. And one of the ways to make that transition feel less alienated to a lot of those buyers, I think, is just to keep the Nokia name in place. On the high end, maybe not so much. Maybe it does become a Skype phone or something. It's kind of an interesting point, Matt. I hadn't thought about that.
Ben?
Well, you know, the thing that I keep coming back to in this discussion is, you know, if you look at the history of many different industries, you find that typically brands rule the world. And I think we constantly may, you know, underestimate the value of a global brand and more importantly, what it takes to build that. But consumers are obviously, I think, highly receptive to this idea of brands and have a high brand awareness. And not that Microsoft has either a terrible brand or, you know, one that's not known. I think there's certainly stronger ones that could be. And again, Nokia's had a good brand. I think they've been able to accomplish, you know, a fair amount of success with branding sort of across the board. So whether it's Nokia or it's something else, my point is Microsoft needs a much stronger brand in this, something that represents personal computing holistically in the environments that are going to get to. And, you know, it may be that that's what Nokia can do. And maybe this 10-year time frame is just one to see if they can do it. You know, work with Nokia, work with their management, their marketing teams, and see if they can really strengthen its brand with the assistance of Microsoft behind it. You know, one other thing, interesting thing to throw into this too is what happens if we throw Intel into the mix and Intel starts getting involved with hardware at the silicon level for their future processors that are well designed to compete in mobility against ARM in the next few years. They're going to be in a similar position where it's going to be hard to find handset vendors, especially those that just want to abandon premium and go at the low end to even consider x86 and those things. And Intel is also another company that has quite a bit of marketing budget that can get thrown behind things. So it could be an interesting union you could see between Microsoft, Nokia, you know, and even Intel kind of coming together to sort of shape and define this new, you know, era of personal electronics and kind of what it means for that kind of a unique ecosystem. And again, all of that just coming back to the experience, the ecosystem, and the brand. And, you know, so I think there's some interesting things that could play out in that regard as well.
We'll keep that intel in our back pocket for the last topic. One more before that, though. Nokia, what's next? I mean, I think actually this works out really well for Nokia. You look at the businesses that are left. It's the Navtech that they bought, which Microsoft gets licensed to and can build on. It is their HERE services, which is, I think, part of that, if not all that. And they keep their patents. Plus, it's really their networking services. You know, they bought the other half from Siemens. And I think that they're actually positioned pretty well. I mean, Bob, you're an expert on Nokia. What do you think?
Well, I don't think anybody's an expert on Nokia these days. But, you know, I think the health of what's left of Nokia financially is in pretty good shape. And I think it's pretty focused. And, you know, if you want my take, I think it becomes an acquisition target for a Cisco or some other big networking company. And I think it gets bought out.
Ben or Matt?
I'm going to defer to Bob on that one because I don't know Nokia's business as well. So, but you know, it sounds like they've got a nice, smaller but perhaps healthier business.
Well, and I think the services side. I mean, I'm familiar with HERE a bit. You know, they were going to, you know, play a horizontal strategy and try to be somewhat device agnostic, and they really do have some great assets there. For, you know, with from maps to other services and a lot of the location-based services they were building into that. So I've actually always been a fan of those products. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Microsoft uses that. And then more importantly, will they potentially offer some of those services, you know, like HERE, you know, the mapping on other products as well, other hardware as well. It could be interesting to see because, again, it could be one of those software pieces, software plus services pieces that it could actually be a nice additional piece of revenue, especially if it does go more horizontal. So that'll be, I think, an interesting one to watch as well.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to just throw this out there. This may maybe, you know, this is me just talking off the top of my head. But if there's a notion that other pieces of what's left at Nokia can be broken up and sold, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like Marissa Mayer go after him with Yahoo, because all the Yahoo maps, the data feed is on Navtech. And I know there's a big argument between the time that Navtech used to release all its new data points and almost a 6-month delay between it getting through all the quality circles that now comprise within the HERE division. And I think she'd like to put a stop to that. And, you know, that actually might play into the relationship she has with Microsoft, too. So who knows?
I think that's great because that leads us to the last topic, which is what's next. And from what's next, I kind of mean, well, BlackBerry's on the block. You know, my take is from BlackBerry that this lowers their value from the perspective of if Nokia, who's doing much better than they are, gets bought for $7.1 billion, what's that mean for BlackBerry, even with their cash on hand? We have HTC on the market. You know, I could see Microsoft certainly picking up BlackBerry to replace EAS with Bez because I think secure email is certainly a differentiator. I also think Intel's interesting. I think you brought that up, Ben, and, you know, I could see Intel looking at BlackBerry or something else, and, you know, there's some interesting pieces there when you start picking up that type of hardware and putting together somebody else. But, Matt, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I think further consolidation among phone makers is probably inevitable. I like the idea of a Microsoft BlackBerry acquisition. Again, I think, yeah, Bez makes good sense as a replacement for ActiveSync. They, you know, Microsoft's been kind of mucking around with mobile management. You know, they've got Intune, they've got System Center, but they never, it doesn't seem like they've ever really done anything with it. So that's certainly an area. And, you know, getting access to BlackBerry's best and biggest enterprise customers might be worth it. There's some patents there as well. I think there might be some regulatory concerns. But if they could do it, that seems like an obvious one to me. HTC, Intel, those are both interesting wild cards that I hadn't really thought too much about. It seems to me that Intel's making, you know, a lot of bets on HTML5. They're very interested in the Firefox OS. So I think Intel's mobile ambitions, we haven't seen the last of those either. And I don't know if they're going to align with Microsoft or not. But I think also, can't underestimate the fact that Microsoft's business is still PCs. They still like the PC business. And I think that they need to do more with tablets. They may have lost the smartphone race already. I don't think they've lost tablets. The iPad's way ahead. Android tablets are starting to come on, but it's not, you know, not as dominant as Android phones are. And I think Microsoft has to move really fast to make its Windows tablets play. There's some things that it can do there. And so I think the next Microsoft move will be tablets. If it's, you know, getting the Nokia tablets out, maybe running Windows Phone instead of RT, who knows? But probably.
Bob?
Well, you know, I've thought about the Microsoft thing, and I'm less getting less excited about that. I actually, you know, if I had a pick, I agree, first of all, that there's going to be more consolidation to happen here. And I think that this Nokia acquisition, if it holds up at this price by Microsoft, and I don't think it will, by the way, that we're going to see more consolidation. I think this is going to speed it up. The second is, you know, my pick would actually be Apple. And I know there's very few people that would think about that. But I'd say that Apple makes the next acquisition. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's BlackBerry for a couple of reasons. One, it gets them some iron for secure email and manageability behind the firewall that they don't have today. And number two, it gives them a very strong direct carrier connection that's been known to be very secure through its NOC. And so if you think about Microsoft, if you think about Apple, who just has a big distaste for all the, you know, the interchange it has to pay, and it wants to start, do something with its own payment network, what a great launching vehicle I think the BlackBerry network plays for them. So I picked them as my number one pick, although I know very few people agree with me. I think, in terms of, you know, the bigger picture, I don't know if I remember it correctly, but I remember when Christian wrote the Innovator Solution, their follow-up book. I think there's a point in the book where they talk about a point where technology inevitably overshoots consumer demands, in particular around functionality and reliability. And when that happens, the competitive environment begins to change from functionality to performance to convenience and price. And when I think about Microsoft making this acquisition and getting some chops, I think Ben used that word, or Matt, you know, to understand the consumer market, I think that's a piece of what this play is all about. And by owning the manufacturing, they're able to figure out how to build the convenience play and the ecosystem, which I don't think they have figured out. But to Ben's very early point on, is to vertically integrate the supply chain to help them with the price efficiencies. And so I think that's a lot what's behind this motivation. And, you know, we'll see who we are. I think, you know, if it's an ecosystem battle, then it isn't going to be about convenience and price. Not all companies are at the same stage. But I think that's the bigger picture that Microsoft's playing it against.
Okay, Ben?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at, I think, a lot of the holes that are still, you know, out there, I think, you know, speculating about, you know, who can buy BlackBerry, and it's an interesting thought that Bob brings up about, you know, Apple. Obviously, I think Microsoft's kind of in that mix. You know, Samsung could be as well. I think the point in all of that is that I think we're going to hear a lot more noise made in 2014 about these more secure devices. I think some companies are going to make a go at really making a big deal about this idea of security. And, you know, when you're just a pure horizontal platform, you know, somebody who's just a hardware maker licensing someone else's software attached to someone else's services, you know, you're giving up quite a bit of that security and end-to-end solutions. That's where I think making it makes sense to be more vertically integrated, especially in some of these key areas, and that you're going to get some of those benefits from being a more secure point by deeply integrating security down into the hardware, the software, and the services. So I think there's more acquisitions to be made to make that happen, because I don't think a lot of people are prepared for that sort of battle, you know, shifting this from, I just got you this phone, now to let's make security a big deal and use things like biometrics for, you know, for payments and authentication, you know, just all of the nitty gritty that I think even consumers will become more aware about. Because again, all it's going to take is some good marketing to bring some of these to the forefront and convince consumers they've been living unsecure lives for quite a bit of time. And now all of a sudden they should start investing in security as a service type offering. So I do think that someone, you know, will stand to gain from BlackBerry's assets in that regard and do more of those solutions. And, you know, and like I said, whether it's acquisitions or not, I think we'll see even just more close alliances be made. You know, like I said, I think just watch very closely Microsoft and Intel and Nokia as a part of this, because I think that those three may very well be stronger together on a range of different solutions. Again, if you buy into the idea that the next, call it decade, will favor vertically integrated systems more so than horizontal ones, there's certainly going to be some players who will go along that path stronger together than they would if they're apart.
Excellent. Guys, this has been great. I'm going to give you each 30 seconds to just, you know, wrap up, and then we're going to say goodbye, because this has actually been more than an hour and I've never done one this long. So, Bob, why don't you start?
Well, I think, you know, we've been dancing around the question of why Nokia is being bought by Microsoft. And if we believe that it is vertical integration and we believe that the operating systems are less relevant and the hardware is less relevant, and it is about the ecosystems, between the organization and the way Microsoft executes internally, I got to wonder if Microsoft is bringing a gun to a knife fight here, and we'll see how this plays out.
Ben?
Yeah, I feel the same. I think this is all about vertically integrating, you know, taking more control of the hardware, creating more of a hardware, software, and services business. But most importantly, you know, I think the important end game is that a more pure view of the consumer market and all of those regions and what's happening in mobility, and that level of education and knowledge that Nokia has gained can be fed into Microsoft, and then hopefully that Microsoft can do something productive with that and sort of use the next few years to align their platforms, PC, tablet, and phone, and again, do so with a much more consumer-centric viewpoint of their hardware, software, and services.
Matt?
Yeah, I guess I would just close by saying the market's not standing still, and Microsoft should have done this a long time ago. I think it's going to be really hard to catch up with where Apple and Google are today. So the most interesting thing to me is to see who they name as CEO, and that to me is going to indicate a lot about Microsoft's future direction and whether they really do double down on consumer or whether they sort of slowly withdraw from that market.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're in an interesting time here, and I think that over the next 12 to 16 months up to the end of 2014, we're going to see a lot of action between mergers. I think we're going to see some bankruptcies, pieces sold off of different companies and new partners. So it's certainly going to be fun to watch. And, you know, next time this happens, we'll try and have a couple of you back. But I got to tell you, thank you, everybody. This has been absolutely awesome. You guys have been great. Some great opinions, some great thoughts. We're going to try and actually get this out tonight, but thank you all for being part of the Mobilecast. Ben, Bob, Matt, you've been awesome.
All right. Thanks
guys. Good talking to you guys.
And that wraps up this episode of the Mobilecast. If you have questions, comments, suggestions, please tweet us, send us an email, drop us a line, and we will talk to you on our next episode.